Tales from Tondlandia presents Darkling Drake, written and read by Ton Krakowski. Episode 4, The Tale. I sat bolt upright as visions of flames and destruction faded from my mind. "Easy," said a soothing voice. "Everything's fine. Here, drink this." Shaking the cobwebs from my head, I ignored the voice and looked around to get my bearings. I was lying on a soft, old-fashioned four-poster bed with gauzy, off-white curtains tied back at each corner, decorated in a tasteful and generally cozy style that I thought might be Victorian. The room boasted dark, ornate furniture, highlighted by billowy, sheer cream drapes framing two large windows. A glimpse of bright blue sky confirmed my suspicions that I had been out for a while. Hoping to spot a clock, my gaze wandered over a pink and gold love seat, innumerable gold-framed paintings of chubby, rosy-cheeked cherubs, and a small roll-top secretary desk. Clashing horribly with the room, my red leather jacket was resting over the back of an excruciatingly uncomfortable-looking ladder-back chair. My boots were placed neatly next to the desk. I checked under the heavy pink and gold comforter to make sure I still had on my pants. Well, at least I didn't have any fun last night that I don't remember. "Tony, look at me," the voice commanded. Sighing, I turned slightly to acknowledge the tall brunette woman sitting in the chair next to the bed. "Start talking," I growled. "First, please drink this. You've had a nasty shock, and this will help clear your head." It took me a moment, but I realized the voice belonged to the woman from the cavern. I started to shake. "No," I whispered, as the events in the large chamber rushed back to me. "It was just another one of those damn dreams," I said more forcefully. But I wasn't fooling anyone, least of all myself. I threw the covers off and stood, arms akimbo, glaring at the woman with every ounce of venom I could muster. "I don't know who the hell you think you are, but I'm not drinking your goddamn Kool-Aid, and I'm not staying here listening to your bullshit." I stomped over to the roll-top desk to retrieve my boots and jacket, grumbling, "What did you do with my bike?" over my shoulder at her without a backward glance. "It's safe," she said calmly. "I'll take you to it, if that's what you wish. My name is Rose." "What?" I said, momentarily thrown off. "I said, my name is Rose. I am the matriarch's heir. You wanted to know who I thought I was. Now you know," she replied haughtily. I slowly turned around to take another look at her. Her porcelain complexion was accented by her dark hair, which she wore back from her face with loose ringlet curls extending down her back to her narrow waist. Wearing an old-fashioned long-sleeve, floor-length forest green dress with a high neckline, she placidly gazed at me with muddy brown eyes, framed by thick lashes that were devoid of even a stroke of mascara. It was as if she had been caught in an eddy in the river of time, separated from the main channel long ago, and then dropped willy-nilly in the 21st century. She possessed a poised self-assurance that I rarely found in other women, and I suddenly felt a kinship with her. "The bitch." "Ah, fine," I said, annoyed with her and disgusted with myself. "Let's get this over with. You're the one who really hired me, right? And since I like my new bike too much to give you back your retainer, I have to at least listen to whatever it is you want me to do. And an explanation of whatever the fuck that little freak show was last night would be a good place to start. After that, all bets are off. So make it good, sister." I pulled the chair out from under the desk, turned around and straddled it. Then I folded my arms across its back, noting that it was indeed as uncomfortable as it looked, and waited impatiently. Her expression softened only slightly in victory as she stood with an imperious air, glided soundlessly across the room, and settled closer to me on the edge of the love seat. "First, we must talk about your dreams," she said quietly. I stared at her in surprise. "What do you know about my dreams?" I demanded. "I know that they are so vivid that it is possible to become lost in them. I know that they are the voice of your soul, begging you to recognize your nature and unbind it, or go mad. I know because I have had them too, right before I learned of my heritage, a heritage we share." She leaned forward and clasped her hands in her lap, staring expectantly at me, as if willing me to suddenly see the light. "Uh-uh, you're not getting off the hook that easy, lady." I scrunched my brow and tilted my head slightly in an exceptionally good imitation of a golden retriever begging for someone, anyone, to just throw the drool-coated baseball already. Silence ensued as we each dared the other to speak first. Oh, hell, I never was very good at keeping my mouth shut. "My heritage." "Yeah, right. Look, you better start making some sense pronto. I don't like being jerked around." I leaned back and snagged my boots to put them on. A wave of disorientation and nausea made me drop them again and cling to the chair. A glass of sweet-smelling clear liquid appeared near my face. "Just drink it," offered Rose. "You needn't be so stubborn. I would not harm you. In fact, you must regain your composure quickly. I have much to tell you, and time is short." Before I could change my mind, I snatched the glass from her hand and tossed back the contents like cheap whiskey. It was sweet and warm. Within moments, the mist in my brain faded away and an invisible weight tumbled from my shoulders. I felt suddenly light, free. "What was that stuff?" I asked, feeling better than I had in days. Rose's entire demeanor changed. She relaxed and rewarded me with a friendly smile. "A gift from the matriarch. Now, isn't that better?" she crooned. I wanted to punch her in the face despite my relief. "Not yet, Drake. Lucy got some splainin' to do." "Yes," I admitted through gritted teeth. "Now talk already. You're really starting to piss me off." "Again," I warned. Rose considered me through her thick lashes. "You really don't understand, do you?" I shook my head and grinned happily when it didn't hurt. "Maybe I can get some more of Mama's private stock thrown in for good measure. Before I have a little fun with my new playmate, that is. The matriarch promised, and I haven't forgotten, sweetie." Breaking me out of my lustful reverie of Mr. Your Hair Smells Amazing from the night before, Rose took a deep breath and said in a much more sympathetic tone, "You are draconian, Tony." I was still trying to wrap my head around that crazy idea, but Rose continued without pause. "Long ago, before humans were little more than apes walking upright, dragons of all shape and size populated the earth. As man became the dominant species, we were forced to band together for protection and secrecy. Many species of dragon were obliterated by man's hatred and fury, but a few survived by evolving an extraordinary self-defense mechanism." The smile she offered me may have been meant to be soothing, but it just unnerved me more, making me wish I would just wake up, or at least come down from whatever acid trip these freaks had put me on, but I was starting to doubt it would be that simple. "In a way, it takes the chameleon's ability to change color and the octopus's shape-changing defense a step further," Rose went on. "We project how we wish to be seen directly into the minds around us. In hatchlings, this ability is instinctual, fooling even the young dragon itself. Only a matriarch has the ability to override a hatchling's camouflage, which is why we needed to take you to her. She began calling you 4 days ago, right after we realized what was stolen and who was responsible. That you were able to resist her call for so long is a testament to your power. I shifted self-consciously. Something wasn't right. I mean, besides the fact that I've been dropped down the rabbit hole and I'm actually buying into the Queen of Hearts' psychotic delusions. Holding up my hand to halt Rose's monologue, I asked, "How is it that I had no idea that I could possibly be anything other than human? And how do you know anything about me anyway?" "Because you're one of the last remaining winged dragons. Our matriarch was entrusted with your safety when you were still an egg. When you hatched prematurely, it was decided that you would be safer if you were sent to live among the humans because your natural cloaking ability was so powerful. When the book was stolen..." "What book? Safer from what? Who decided? You're losing me here." Confusion was making me irritable again. As if on cue, the door flew open, and Mr. Your Hair Smells Amazing himself, that was definitely his official title now, graced us with his smokin' presence. "She has to go, Rose. Now." He didn't even spare me a glance as he tossed an apple my way in what I can only assume was some sort of test. I easily snatched it from the air and started munching. "Come on, Tony," he said urgently. "Sure," I said. Then I walked casually toward the door and swung, catching him under the chin with a right hook and sending him sprawling at my feet before taking another bite of the apple in my other hand. "What the hell was that?" he shouted in surprise and fury. "A preview," I replied around the chunk of fruit in my mouth. "Thanks for the apple." "Crunchy," I grinned. "This day is getting better and better," I thought as I nonchalantly sat and donned my boots between bites. "Christian!" Eyes wide with concern, Rose rushed to his side, only to be shoved roughly away as Blue Eyes got to his feet, rubbing his jaw and eyeing me warily. "What's up?" I asked cheerily. "Damn, he's hot." Christian fixed me with a steely eye as he spoke to Rose. "They're coming for her. We have to go." "Take her to the roof," she answered immediately. "All birds must leave the nest sometime." What the fuck was that supposed to mean? Before I could reassess my original impression of Rose, Christian grabbed my arm, hustling me out the door and up a dank-smelling flight of rickety stairs. The door at the top banged open to reveal a gorgeous summer sky set with lazy, puffy white clouds. Once he dragged me near the edge, I could see a frothy gray-blue ocean pounding against a lonely strand of rocky shore far, far below. Christian grasped both my shoulders and turned me to face him. "Don't think. Just fly," he said melodramatically. By the time my overtaxed mind finally figured out what he intended to do, it was too late. He had already pushed me off the roof. This has been Darkling Drake, written and read by Tawn Krakowski. Tune in to Tales from Tawnlandia every Wednesday for new episodes.